This is episode number 61 of the Fearless Presentations podcast, the fastest, easiest way to eliminate public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on Fearless Presentations, Doug Stannert.
Welcome to the Fearless Presentations podcast. I'm Doug Stannert, CEO of the Leaders Institute and Fearless Presentations, and this is the podcast that helps people just like you eliminate public speaking fear and also become leaders within their industries by becoming a more professional speaker and a more confident presenter. This is episode number 61. And on this episode, I'm going to do something just a little bit different than kind of normal. Sometimes we're asked to speak in a situation where we need to be inspirational or motivational. And for a lot of us, that can be really uncomfortable, even for those of us who are professional speakers. So we're going to basically cover seven of the most famous motivational speakers in modern history, the ones where recordings were around anyway. Obviously, we don't have recordings of Jesus or Abraham Lincoln or George Washington or any of those kind of guys. But we do have recordings of some of the famous motivational speakers in the modern era. And as a result of that, we can go back and kind of take a look at what was it that made these guys really, really good, especially what made them good during their age, during their era when they were really, really popular. And we can probably learn some lessons from that will help us in the modern world as well. And in fact, I would encourage you, this is one of those episodes that you want to stick around until the very, very, very end. Because when I got to the last part of doing the research for this episode, it was kind of shocking. I found something that was really, really cool that will help you design fantastic speeches, especially if you're interested in ever doing like a TED talk or a motivational speech at a convention or something like that. One of the things that I kind of figured out about what some of these folks have done, or some of the folks in the modern era are doing now, is really eye-opening. It was real eye-opening for me, even as a professional speaker. So this podcast is brought to you by fearlesspresentations.com. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, make sure and do that. Hit the subscribe button because you can receive all of the new episodes when they're released. In addition, if you go to YouTube and you do a search for Fearless Presentations, you can be one of our inaugural subscribers to our new Fearless Presentations YouTube channel. So recently, we've created a separate YouTube account just for Fearless Presentations, just for the stuff that we're doing here in the Fearless Presentations office. And we're putting some really, really nice videos up that can help you reduce public speaking fear, become a more professional speaker, and really just get better at communicating and organizing your thoughts and that kind of thing. So you can get some great content from that new YouTube channel. So be one of our inaugural subscribers so you can get every single one of those things. By the way, we have seven Fearless Presentations classes coming up before the end of the year. So December is a really busy month for us. We got classes in Tampa, Phoenix, Atlanta, Detroit, Seattle, Indianapolis, and New York. All of those are happening before the end of the year. And I'm just because we're so busy, I'm actually going to be teaching a lot of those. So if you want to see me or if you want to come train with me, I'm definitely going to be teaching Seattle and New York. So if you're going to either one of those cities to be in the class, then I'll be your instructor for that. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to actually doing one more of those, although right here, I'm kind of struggling with which one of the other ones. But definitely if you're in the Seattle area or New York area and you want to come train with me, just go to fearlesspresentations.com and register for either of those classes. And in the new year, we've got classes in Dallas and LA and Washington, D.C. and Kansas City, San Antonio, and then a bunch more February, March, April. So we've got classes coming up all over. So just go to fearlesspresentations.com and look at the seminar schedule to register for any one of those classes. One other thing, just as an aside, the tuition for the Fearless Presentations classes is actually going to go up fairly significantly in January. So if you register before December 31st, you'll actually be able to attend any of the classes that I've kind of mentioned for the regular tuition that we have right now. That price is going to be going up. So just a quick heads up there for those of you who are on our subscription list. All right, so let's get on with today's podcast. Quite often, we'll get phone calls from people who want to do some training with us, or they're questioning whether or not we're a good fit for them. And one of the things that they will ask us about is, hey, how do I inspire my people? You know, how do I inspire my team? How do I be more motivational? And for a lot of us, that can be a little challenging. It's something that most of us don't. We don't think of ourselves as being motivational speakers. I don't think, even though I do a lot of speaking, I still don't consider myself to be a motivational speaker, even though I do a lot of keynotes. I'll do, you know, 15, 20 keynotes every single year. I charge a huge fee for that if you want me to come out and do that. But, you know, I do that. But even myself, you know, even somebody that speaks for a living, and because I'm a trainer, because it's not really my forte, when folks ask me to do the motivational stuff, it takes me a little bit more time to kind of prepare for that type of thing. And you'll probably find that as well. If your real goal is not necessarily to inform or to teach, but to motivate and inspire, there are things that you want to do just a little bit differently than what we typically teach, especially in the Fearless Presentations class. However, you can adapt some of the stuff that we teach to make fantastic motivational speeches. And that's kind of what we want to talk about here. So what I've done is I've gone back and done some research on 7 of the absolute top motivational speakers, people that speak for a living, or that's their what they're mainly known for in the modern era, when there's television and radio and YouTube and all that kind of stuff. So in the modern era, who are the top motivational speakers? And so I went back to the guy who kind of set the stage for being a motivational speaker, and that's Earl Nightingale. In fact, if you're not familiar with Earl Nightingale, you know, because he was basically really popular back in the 50s and 60s of the last century. So it's been a long time since Earl Nightingale was a mainstay in the industry. However, he was one of the guys that kind of started the whole motivational speaking industry. And in fact, he partnered up with a guy named Vic Conant, and they created the Nightingale Conant Company. And a lot of, especially in the 80s and 90s, and really all the way into the turn of the new century, they were responsible for putting out content from a lot of the top motivational speakers and trainers. So they had a lot of ways that they were distributing the content. So they were distributing the CD packs and the cassette tapes and all that kind of stuff. So Nightingale Conant was really well known for that. So I went back and he was the first person that I kind of looked at, Earl Nightingale. And the reason why I kind of picked him first was because when I first started seeing that there was a potential to make speaking an income for me, to become a professional speaker, Earl Nightingale was really one of the triggers that caused me to kind of make a behavior change or make a career change anyway. And what happened was the very first interview that I went on as a sales guy. I was trying to be a salesperson. I was in the oil industry, and the oil industry at the time, even though that's what I studied in school, the price of oil had dropped way down, and I could see the handwriting on the wall. I knew that since I was the last guy that this big company hired, that even though I was really good at my job, they were going to start laying off, and they would start with the people that were the last ones in. So I ended up changing my career and going into sales. I knew I had to get out of the oil industry because they weren't really hiring. So I needed to do something else. So I was basically, I answered just about every type of want ad related to sales possible, you know, because if you don't have any experience as a sales guy, you don't have a track record of being able to sell, it's kind of hard to get your foot in the door. So I was just trying to get any sales job. And the first sales job that I went on was the first interview anyway. Well, I didn't actually kind of take the job, but the first interview that I went on, It was weird. I think it was more like a multi-level type thing because it was kind of an odd interview process. When I got there, it was on a Saturday morning, which was kind of odd anyway. But when I got there on a Saturday morning, I was one of like 30 people that were interviewing at the same exact time. And there was a guy that got up and he stood up and he was trying to motivate the group and everything. And it was interesting. It was fun and I enjoyed it. I knew very quickly that I didn't want to kind of be a salesman for that type of company. It just seemed kind of wishy-washy. It didn't seem like the kind of company I wanted to work for, but I didn't want to embarrass myself by just kind of walking out. So I just kind of stuck around and listened to the pitch. And the thing that happened though was about an hour or so after the guy started, he put in a cassette tape. Now this was in the mid 90s or so. So this was back when DVDs were around and everything. So it was kind of odd that he had a cassette tape that he was using. So he stuck in a VHS recording. And it was a VHS recording of Earl Nightingale doing this Strangest Secret. And basically it was just Earl Nightingale sitting on stage with a spotlight. And he had a microphone and he was just sitting on a stool and he just started talking. And Earl Nightingale had a really methodical kind of delivery. He was a radio guy. So that's what he was really well known for. In fact, he made his name for being a radio personality on the shows, the serial shows. Like I think Sky King was the one that he was the voice for. So that's how he kind of made a name for himself. And when he started doing the motivational speaking, the way that he, the process or the medium that he was using to relay his content was the LP phonograph record. So, remember back for those of you who are not old enough to know what that is, this was the records that skip. And I think you can still find these things around, but they're not very common anymore. So, that LP record lasted about 30 minutes or so. And then you could flip it over and you could play the other side. But most of the time, the backside of the records was usually that was like the add-on. It wasn't really the best part. So like when you got a song and you like a single on a song phonograph record, you the song that you purchased was on side number one, and then side B or side two was the one that was, you know, they were trying to promote, but was probably never going to be a hit because if it was a hit, they want you to buy a new record, right? So that was kind of the process that Earl Nightingale was kind of going through. So he used this technique that was really cool, though. He spent the entire 30 minutes talking about one thing. So if you're familiar with the type of technique that we teach in Fearless Presentations, if you've listened to some of our podcast or watched us on YouTube, the technique that we use quite often is a 3-point talk or a 4-point talk or a 5-point talk. Basically, take your content, narrow it down to just a few key bullet points, and then cover those bullet points really, really well. Well, Earl Nightingale took that to a whole new level. He would do a 1-point talk. So like, for instance, The Strangest Secret is one of the most famous speeches that he ever gave.
I'd like to tell you about the strangest secret in the world. Some years ago, the late Nobel Prize-winning Dr. Albert Schweitzer was being interviewed in London, and a reporter asked him, "Doctor, what's wrong with men today?" And the great doctor was silent a moment, and then he said, "Men simply don't think."
And his delivery is very interesting, because what he'll do is for the first, I'd say about a third or so, so we're talking about 10 full minutes of the speech, he doesn't really tell you what that secret is. He's setting the stage to get to the point to tell you what that one point is, so that you're hanging on every word to kind of say, well, what is it? What is it? What is it? You're basically, what he's doing is he's using the sales technique where he's having the audience kind of, it's almost like we want to pull the content. It's like, all right, get on with it. Tell us what this is. I'm getting really excited about it.
Here's the key to success and the key to failure. We become what we think about. Now, let me say that again. We become what we think about. Throughout all history, the great wise men and teachers, philosophers and prophets have disagreed with one another on many different things. It's only on this one point that they are in complete and unanimous agreement. Listen to what Marcus Aurelius, the great Roman emperor, said. A man's life is what his thoughts make of it.
So he inserts stories and lots of data and anecdotes and just a bunch of content. But every single piece of content or quote that he does from a famous person of the time, he's reinforcing that one thing.
Do what the experts since the dawn of recorded history have told you you must do. Pay the price by becoming the person you want to become. It's not nearly as difficult as living unsuccessfully.
It's still a very, very good listen, even though it's fairly dated now. But Earl Nightingale, he was the kind of godfather, I guess, of motivational speaking. And, you know, because he was one of the first to use the different mediums that were the new mediums that were out there.
Live this new way and the floodgates of abundance will open and pour over you more riches than you may have dreamed existed. Money? Yes, lots of it. But what's more important, you'll have peace. You'll be in that wonderful minority who lead calm, cheerful, successful lives. Start today. You have nothing to lose, but you have a whole life to win. This is Earl Nightingale, and thank you.
The second speaker that I wanted to kind of focus on was Martin Luther King Jr. So MLK, he is by far one of the most popular, I guess, speakers in the modern era. I mean, when you ask who's the best motivational speaker ever, a lot of times you'll hear MLK's name come up, if not first, at least in the top, you know, three or four. The reason why is because Martin Luther King Jr. did something that was a little interesting. What he did, because he was focusing more on inspiring the live audience, unlike Earl Nightingale, who was trying to make a record. Martin Luther King Jr. was trying to inspire the live audience, get them to create a behavior change. And for those of us who've been speaking a while, we know that if we're trying to create a behavior change in people, especially in a live audience, we have to keep our message very, very simple and then repeat it. And that's the technique that Martin Luther King Jr. used quite often.
I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
He would say that phrase, I have a dream, and then he would give you a story or a piece of evidence about it. And then once he would finish that little mini story, he would go back to reinforce his point again one more time.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream.
So basically what he was doing was he was kind of taking the technique that Earl Nightingale kind of created, that one-point talk, but he made the message much more simple, and then he used a cadence. He used a technique that made it kind of rhythmic. He made it interesting for people to kind of pay attention to, and he got the crowd captivated with that phrase. Now, by the way, this is not you still see people using this same technique today. And in fact, if you go to any kind of political rally, this is quite often used from politicians in both parties. So, or any party really for that matter, but it's basically a technique to where they have a simple message that they're trying to reinforce. They will state that message first and then tell a story or example, and then state the message again. And eventually what happens is they're using their body language, they're using their pauses to try to get the audience to involved in the conversation. By the way, you can do this as well. This is not something that's really difficult to do. It's something that you can do at any, especially if it's let's say you're going to be speaking at an annual meeting or an annual convention, and there is a theme to that annual meeting or that annual convention. Let's say the theme, I'll just make one up. Let's say that the theme is together we are one, right? I just made that up. But if that's the theme, then if I want to create a MLK style speech in that presentation, all I have to do is do just a little bit of research from the people in that group and find 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 at the most, but I'm looking for somewhere around 4 or 5 different stories that reinforce that theme, stories from our experience as an organization or as a group that reinforce that. So if I'm the CEO of the organization and the theme is We Are One, I might just start out by saying the theme for this convention is We Are One. Let me give you some examples of how I truly see that we are one. And then that person, whoever's speaking, will now start and give a quick little story or example of one thing that we've done in the last 12 months, since the last annual meeting that showed that we worked together as a group really, really well. And tell that in some fairly significant detail. Give some detail so that people are able to paint the picture of what happened in that situation. And then as soon as that person finishes the story, he or she will end with, "We are one. Together we are one." Just basically say that phrase, "Together we are one," you know, with a little bit of energy and enthusiasm. Does that again a second time. Same thing. Story with "Together we are one" at the end. Third time, does it again. The fourth time now, though, after we've told three stories and at the end of each one of those stories, he or she, whoever the person is speaking, has said that phrase, then the next time that we get to that point, that person will just say "together" and then open their palms up to the crowd and just pause. It takes a little bit of courage and a little bit of patience to do this, but you say "together" and then pause and then open up your hands. And then at least some, if not a majority of the people in the audience should kind of repeat your words because they've heard you do it two or three times now. So now, once you get to that last time, the fifth time, or maybe the sixth time, if you have a sixth story, then basically at the end, you might do a, you know, maybe a fifth time and do the "together" and then one more time with your palms raised. But the last time that we do this, the very last time, we just pause and open our palms to the audience one more time and let them finish the presentation for us. "Together we are one." Right. So, and this could work for any phrase. As long as it's a theme that's kind of catchy and everything, you can kind of use that as a way to get the audience involved. You'll see politicians do this a lot. I mean, it's something that's very common and it's easy. It's an easy technique to use. So that was one of the things that MLK kind of, I don't know if he created it, but I know he kind of mastered it. That's one of the things that he did really, really, really well. And you see a bunch of people that in today's world that try to mimic what he did. Especially speaking about similar topics and that kind of thing. And it just doesn't come off the same way. But you can do it on just about any topic that you're speaking on, especially if it's something that the people in the audience are really into. And you can kind of use that technique. So the MLK technique works really, really well.
"Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, 'Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.'"
The third motivational speaker that was really, really popular was Zig Ziglar. So Zig Ziglar is one of the mainstays of motivational speaker. Now, he passed away about a decade or so ago, but he was here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He was where I'm from. And one of the things that he was most known for was his humor. And he used a ton of self-deprecating humor in his presentations.
But the old boy that did the interview was really something else. He was so skeptical, he'd demand a bacteria count on the milk of human kindness. He's so cynical that he still thinks somebody pushed Humpty Dumpty. I mean, you have seen the kind. His opening statement to me, I mean, the first cracker out of the barrel after he had turned on the cameras, you know, he said, "Zig, you go all over the country talking about positive thinking, making money, going to the top." He said, "You're so positive, you think you could whip Muhammad Ali?" Well, folks, that's dumb, even though I fought in the ring 2 years. And it's a matter of record, just for your information, that the worst I ever finished was second. As a matter of fact, the only reason I quit was because of my hands. The referee kept stepping on them.
Zig has a really, he had a weird kind of delivery. He had a weird kind of accent. It was... He's not the stereotypical kind of person that you would think of to be a professional speaker. Wasn't really fantastic looking or anything like that. There was nothing really special about Zig, but Zig had a way of captivating the audience that made him so likable.
Can't always interpret murmurs and giggles and all those kind of good things. And I certainly couldn't hear it from Portland and Salt Lake City. I mean, from Portland and Kansas City. But for those of you who are right here, how many of you missed at least one of the questions? Can I see your hand? Boy, about everybody's got their hand up. Now, how many of you remember just a few seconds ago when I said, now I want you to carefully, as a matter of fact, maybe for the first time since you've owned your watch, I want you to very carefully look at your watch. How many of you remember me saying that a few seconds ago? Okay, what time is it? Truth is, ladies and gentlemen, we have eyes to see but see not. We have ears to hear, but hear not. We have hands to feel, and we feel not. We've got everything there in front of us, opportunity galore, and if we cannot even identify what's on our watch, doesn't it make sense that we need to open our eyes, adjust these magnificent new glasses you're being fitted with, and look around you and see what is there? Yes?
He built that bond with his audience. His audience loved him. He was entertaining. He was a showman. He made his presentations really, really funny. And he used the self-deprecating humor as a way to do that. Another great motivational speaker that kind of, and this is one of the guys that kind of inspired me because he was really popular at the time that I was coming of age in being a professional speaker, is Les Brown. So Les Brown was another really, really popular motivational speaker. And I have kind of a soft spot in my heart for Les Brown because number one, I've met him a couple of times and he's just a really, really super nice guy in person. One of the reasons why he was so popular is that he was really crafty. He took what he had seen people do in past decades, in past eras anyway, and he took some of the best parts of what they were doing and combined it into a brand new type of technique that was in and of his own. I mean, it was something that was kind of new.
I do not believe that any of us have dreams that were not given to us for the purpose of accomplishing those particular dreams. And I want to share something with you that has changed my life. I started out, as was indicated by Jack, some very humble beginnings. I don't know what that dream is that you have. I don't care how far-fetched it might appear to be. I don't care how disappointing it might have been as you've been working toward that dream. But here's what I know, that dream that you're holding in your mind, that it's possible. Let's say that together, please. It's possible.
So basically, he was taking what Zig Ziglar was doing with his self-deprecating humor, and he was combining that with what MLK was doing with that simple cadence, that simple direction that was repeated over and over again. But now we're in a new era. So you know, since you know, back when Earl Nightingale started, that was the LP kind of. The recording or the record, and by the time Zig comes around, yes, you know, records are still being made, and I'm sure there are probably Zig Ziglar records out there, but you know, we're basically looking at like cassette tapes and on into the CD-ROM age, and that's where Les Brown is coming in. Les Brown is coming in at a time when he wants to give the simple message in a short component or a short bite-sized piece, and then he'll give another simple message and another bite-sized piece and give another message and another bite-sized piece so that he can create an entire LP or an entire CD or a cassette, you know, that kind of thing. So basically he's stringing together a series of these things. So if you know, the I Have a Dream speech didn't last that long. It was a very peppy, high energy kind of presentation. And so what he's doing, what Les Brown would do is he would take those really kind of short, high energy, peppy, cadence-filled speech and put in lots of self-deprecating humor and stories and examples.
When I was in New York walking down a street and a guy approached me and said, "Hey, mister, can I shine your shoes?" And I said, "No, I'm in a hurry. I don't have time." I kept walking. Someone else said, "Hey, man, your shoes look cluttery. May I shine your shoes?" I said, "No, I don't have time. I'm sorry. I'm busy." And I was walking faster, and many people solicited me for my business. And then finally, a young man stepped in front of me, and he said, "Excuse me." And he started counting, 97, 98, 99, 100. He said, "Sir?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Come here, please." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Today is my birthday." And every year, just to thank God for another year of life, the 100th person who passes my shoeshine stand, I offer them a free shoeshine. Would you give me the honors? I said, why, sure. I got up on the shoeshine stand, George, and I sat there, and he shined my shoes diligently. And when I got down, I looked at them, they were sparkling. And I was walking away, and I said, thank you. And I stopped. I said, excuse me, but how much do you usually charge? He said, only $2. I said, I tell you what, today's your birthday. Here's $5. Keep the change. He said, thank you. As I was walking away, looking in the opposite direction at other people coming, he started counting again. 97, 98, 99, 100.
And I kind of, this is one of those things that I don't want to misquote it. So I'll kind of read a little bit of, you know, what I saw Les Brown do that kind of inspired me and kind of made me want to get into the industry. So he's got a unique way of quoting an expert. And in fact, I've talked about this on previous sessions, but his unique way of quoting an expert is that he will give a quote that a famous person said, and then he'll make it his own. He'll create his own little simple message cadence, kind of like what MLK did. And then he'll fill the time with lots of stories and lots of examples.
And I remember this high school teacher, Mr. Leroy Washington, at the end of school one June, it was just a few days before we were supposed to leave. And I just got my report card, and it indicated that I'd failed history and I'd fail English, and I would have to go to summer school. And I was feeling within myself that I was a failure, that I'm slower than most people in getting paperwork. And I was feeling down on myself and very negative. And Mr. Washington was giving a speech to the graduating seniors, and I was in 11th grade. And even though I wasn't supposed to be in there, I went in there because the speech he was giving, that speech was for me. And as he talked, my heart began to beat fast. Tears began to run by my eyes, and I was in the back just listening to him, because he said, and he was a very dramatic man, I still talk to him to this day. He said, as graduating seniors of Booker T. Washington High School, I want you to know that you're blessed and highly favored, and that as you go toward the future, begin to know that you have greatness within you. And if just one of you here begin to envision yourselves as being blessed and highly favored to reach your goals, if just one of you capture the essence of what that means, that you have greatness within you and a responsibility to manifest that greatness, that you can make your parents proud, you can make your school proud, you can touch millions of people's lives, and the world will never be the same again because you came this way. And the students gave him a rousing standing ovation. And as he left the auditorium, I ran down the steps and I caught him in the parking lot. I said, Mr. Washington? He said, yes. I said, do you remember me, sir? He said, no. I said, my name is Leslie Brown. My mother, she works in the cafeteria here. I'm one of the twins, Leslie and Wesley. I said, Mr. Washington, but you know, I got these big dreams. You know, I like talking to people. I love people. I said, I want to work with people, and I got this dream of buying my mama a home. Could I do that, Mr. Washington? He said, it's possible, Mr. Brown. And as he walked away, I called him again. I said, Mr. Washington? He said, what do you want now? I said, I'm the one, sir. I said, I'm the one. You remember me, sir. I'm Miss Mamie Brown's boy. I'm the one. I'm the one.
And he would make them into their own kind of separate. We would take that separate little speech, and then he would add another additional speech to that, similar, and then another one. So he'd put three or four of these together. So in reality, what he was doing was he was doing the technique that we teach in fearless presentations. He was creating a 3-point talk or a 4-point talk or a 5-point talk to create a longer presentation, but he was breaking them down into component parts. That's the technique that we teach in Fearless Presentations, and it works really, really well, by the way.
And you must feel that that's why you're here, because you are the one. And I remember when PBS first played one of my specials called You Deserve one Sunday afternoon in Miami, Florida. I had some friends call him to tell him to tune in. And he watched the program. He called me in Detroit, and I answered the phone. I said, hello. He said, may I speak to Les Brown, please? I said, who's calling? He said, you know who this is. I said, oh, Mr. Washington, it's you. He said, you were the one, weren't you? I said, yes, sir. He said, and you were so crazy. I said, I know, but I'm rich now.
The next speaker is Brian Tracy. And Brian Tracy is totally different from all of the rest of these. It's one of the reasons why he's still popular. Even today, he's got a really big following.
When we look at the wealthiest people in America today, Warren Buffett, Michael Dell, of course, Bill Gates, Paul Allen, and the Walton family, all first-generation multi-billionaires. We have a $12 trillion economy today that is growing at the rate of $500 to $600 billion a year, and all that money is going through somebody's fingers, and your job is to make sure it goes through yours and some of it sticks. Is that a good goal for today? And my job is to show you how to do it.
Even though he's known today as being a motivational speaker, that's not really where he makes most of his money. Most of his money is from the teaching part. He is teaching people how to create behavior change, which is quite a bit different than Les Brown. Les Brown made almost all of his money off of motivating audiences. So he would go and speak to thousands of people. He would get paid a bunch of money. He would sell his books to that audience. Tracy is quite a bit different. Tracy does a lot of keynote speeches, but he does his keynote speeches as a way to get people to do extended periods of his training. So he'll do a 60-minute speech, but that 60-minute speech will have like 15 different series of audio recordings or video recordings that you can purchase from him to make it to where he can reinforce a lot of that stuff.
What I discovered, which changed my life and which brought us here today, is I discovered the law of cause and effect. The law of cause and effect, sowing and reaping, action and reaction, is the great universal or iron law of the universe. What it says is that everything happens for a reason, is that there are no causeless effects, is that even if we don't know what is causing the effect, we trace it back. It's the basis of the scientific process, of all medical research, of all marketing, of all business, is if you can define an effect that you want, you can trace it back and find somebody who at one time did not have that effect, and then find out what they did, and then do the same things, and you eventually get the same results. We say that success is not an accident. Failure is not an accident. Success leaves tracks.
The neat thing about Brian Tracy, though, that makes him different is that he broke his teaching down into a series of simple steps. So he would, if he was going to teach you how to be a better salesperson, he would create a book on, you know, how to be a better salesperson, but in that there would be different sections: how to change your mindset first, and then how to prospect better, and then how to do a sales pitch better, and then how to close better, right? So he would create those four or five different component parts, and then for each one of those component parts, he'd put a series of steps. So to change your mindset, these are the five things you need to do. To prospect better, these are the five things that you need to do. And he'd make them very, very simple. And the neat thing that Brian Tracy did, I keep saying did, but he does. I mean, Brian Tracy is still very popular and he still does this stuff. But Tracy, one of the things that he's most known for is putting what I call the why into the actual step. Now, if you've heard me speak or heard me teach how to design presentations, you'll know that this is one of my big hot buttons. This is one of the things that I focus a lot on, because this is one of the things that makes mediocre speakers into great speakers, or good speakers into great speakers into professional motivational speakers, right? So basically, if you can do this thing really, really well, you'll be highly sought after as a speaker. And it's basically putting what I call the why into the bullet point itself. So the why would be, if you're going to give tip number one, whatever that tip number one is that you're teaching them, why do people care about that? Why are they interested in that thing that you're going to talk, that you're trying to get them to do? Give them a reason to do this. I'll give you a good example from Tracy's teaching that where he does this, and he does it really, really well.
Point number one is that all business or sales skills are learnable. All financial skills are learnable. If you can drive a car, you can learn any skill. If you can drive a car, you can learn the skill. Now, number two is you're probably only one skill away from doubling your income right now. You're probably only one skill away from setting yourself on the road to becoming a self-made millionaire. That turns out to be the case for almost everyone. And if you don't know what that skill is, maybe over the course of the time we spend together, it'll jump out at you. But whatever it is, you've got to find it out and go to work on it, because it is learnable. It's a learnable skill.
And all of a sudden people are going, what? Well, I can double my income by just doing one thing? Yeah. And then he teaches about that. So he's putting the why in there. People want to double their income. So as a result of that, they will want to find out what that one skill is that's going to be their big change agent, right? So anyway, master at that. All right, the next presenter that I've kind of got mixed feelings about is Anthony Robbins. Anthony Robbins is probably, he is so well known. He's such a fantastic marketer. He's just one of those guys that if you mention Tony Robbins to anybody, they know who he is, because he's everywhere. Yeah. And in fact, Anthony Robbins came of age at a time when the CD-ROM was just taking off, and he embraced that. He figured out that this new technology at the time in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, late 90s, that kind of thing, this new technology was a great way to teach a lot of people at one time and make a ton of money in the process. So what he started doing was doing kind of like what Brian Tracy was doing, kind of like what Zig was doing, but in a fairly unique kind of way, because he would basically do the technique that I taught on the How to End a Speech with a Bang session that I did recently. So one of the techniques that I used in that was you tell a story within the content of your presentation. And then at the end, to end your presentation, to kind of summarize the presentation, you tell the rest of the story or the end of the story. It's a great way to end a speech. Well, Anthony Robbins took that to a whole new level, and he would use that as a great teaching technique. So he would start out with one of those self-deprecating stories like we talked about that Zig Ziglar would use a lot. He'd start out with one of those self-deprecating stories, and then he did his teaching. He would give the three bullet points, kind of like what Brian Tracy was doing, and he would reinforce each one of those bullet points with anecdotes and stories and data and quotes and you know, give you some good meat. And then at the end, after he would give you all the teaching, he would end with the rest of the story. So he would basically sandwich the content that he was trying to get people to remember between two really emotional, powerful stories. One where things didn't go very well, and then at the end, how, because he had changed what he was doing, he became more successful. A good example of this was when he spoke to Dreamforce in 2017. So this is fairly recently. I spoke to this organization called Dreamforce. And Dreamforce at the time was trying to feed 1 million families. They were going to do basically give meals to 1 million families. That was the goal. So they asked him to come and kind of give his insight or to motivate the crowd in order to accomplish this goal.
There's only one way you succeed long term. Anybody can get lucky, do something for a period of time. But real success in any measure whatsoever comes when you do more for others than anybody else. There's no other way to do it. You find a way to add more what? Value. And if we find the way to add more value, we can be superior in the marketplace, but we can also be superior in our own lives. We can enjoy our lives at a different level. We can have a different set of pride that isn't fake. It's not ego. Ego is when you try to make it better than it is, and you know the truth is it's not. But when you really are in a position, hello, when you're in a position where you own what you're about, and you know what you're here to deliver, and you deliver it on a significant scale, then you have an opportunity to really experience not only success, but fulfillment. And this conference has gotten bigger and bigger, not only in its size, but also in its impact. And so I'm really privileged to be back with you here. And I know you're working to raise 1 million meals. And I'm very, very into hunger, to say the least, primarily because I was so hungry at a stage of my life. And my life was completely changed because when I was 11 years old, we had no money and no food. And we'd gotten used to that, but it was Thanksgiving, which makes it more emotional. And my parents were saying and doing things that after you say them, you can never take them back. And it was very profoundly painful, obviously, for myself as the oldest and trying to keep my brothers and sisters from hearing it. But it profoundly changed me because that day something changed my life, and it was somebody simply coming and delivering food. And it wasn't the person, wasn't giving it, it was a delivery guy. And it wasn't a happy moment for my father. It was interesting. My mom and dad are yelling at each other. My mom's saying things to my father, you haven't taken care of us. Pretty painful moment, and the door happens, and I go open the door, and there's this tall guy standing there with these big bags of food, and on the ground beside him, he had this pan with uncooked turkey. And he said, "Is your father here?" And I said, "Just one moment." And I sprinted to get my dad, thinking this was going to be the most euphoric moment you could possibly imagine. Like, God had come by and surprised us, somebody cared about us, whatever you wanted to frame it. And my father came to the front door begrudgingly. When he saw the man, he got very angry. And he said, "You know, we don't take charity." And he went to slam the door. And the man was a very tall guy, and he put his arm or shoulder against it. It kind of bounced off of him. And he said, "Sir, this is not charity. Everybody has tough times. And somebody knows you're in need, and they want you to have a beautiful Thanksgiving. Please accept this gift." And my father got even more intense and started saying, "I don't accept charity." And this time the man put his foot there and it bounced off of it. And then he said something to my father that I thought my father would hit him. He looked at my father and said, and he looked at me in the background and said, "Don't let your family suffer because of your ego." It was intense words to say. My father didn't know what to do. He grabbed the food, he slammed it down and slammed the door. And I tell you the story because everything in our life is controlled by three decisions. The first one is, what are you going to focus on? And the second decision you make is, what does it mean? As soon as you look at something, think about something, focus on it, you go, "What does this mean?" If the meaning is you don't care, whatever meaning we come up with, that affects the third decision, which is, what am I going to do? And what people do is based on the meaning, since the meaning creates emotion, right? You can be miserable no matter what you have, and you can be euphoric having nothing.
He ends the story with how when he was 17 years old, he saved up his money. He's broke, but he saved up his money to feed two families. And he went and took that food to one of these families on a holiday. And the people who were receiving that gift from him were just so appreciative. They were, you know, telling him how they were thanking God that they prayed for something like this to happen, and it did, and that kind of thing. So a very emotional ending. And he said that, and basically what he was doing was he was saying how, because I changed my mindset was different from my father's. I had a different experience. And because I had a different experience, everybody in the throughout the activity or throughout that incident had a positive reaction to it. And so he's using that as a teaching technique. So he's using those really emotional stories on the front and on the end to kind of sandwich in the content that he wants to get across. So anyway, so as you can kind of see, as we're kind of progressing, a lot of these motivational speakers are taking what the last people did or the last generation did and improving it and adapting it to the new technology that's really out there. So if you start off with Earl Nightingale, who was doing the One Point Talk on the Phonograph album, you know, that was the media. And then as we got into the cassettes, it started changing. It was more bite-sized content. People were, you know, because the songs back when we were listening to cassettes, the songs would be 4, 5, 6 minutes long, and then it would pause and there'd be another song. That's the way songs were kind of done. So people started adapting. These motivational speakers started adapting their content to be similar to that. They would give their content in bite-sized pieces on a recording, and that way you could cover a lot more content in a shorter period of time. And then Anthony Robbins, when he came on board, he took it to a whole new level, and he created these like 20 CD sets that he would charge, I don't know, 20 grand for or whatever. It was fairly expensive, but he was making a bunch of money by giving people really, really good content in a huge amount of CDs and that kind of thing. Once YouTube came on board, though, once we got to the modern video era where everything is kind of free on the internet, things have changed a lot. So what you'll notice is that the one example that I'm going to use here on this session is Ken Robinson, and the reason I picked him was because he was one of the early guys on TED Talks that became just unbelievably popular. This one TED Talk, because of the way that he delivered it, has been seen, I can't remember the number, but it's like 50 million times or something like that. I mean, it's this huge, huge number of views, and it's because of the delivery. And so I went back and said, okay, what makes this one different from the other TED Talks that are out there? What's different about this one? And the funny thing that I kind of found out was that what Ken Robinson did was he went back to the technique that Earl Nightingale used back in the 50s, and it worked brilliantly, because now the media has changed to where people want a single topic, a single piece of content, and they want to be able to do something with it. So that's why they're watching the TED Talks. They're looking at the title. They're listening to a TED Talk based on the title. And if that title gives them the information that they're looking for, everybody's happy and they'll share it. And that's basically what they did with Ken Robinson. So Ken Robinson, he wrote a speech, or he delivered a speech called Do Schools Kill Creativity? It's a great speech, by the way. But he spends the first, I don't know, 5-6 minutes of the 20-minute speech. You only get 20 minutes in a TED Talk, so you have to really condense your content down. And he spends the first 5 or 6 minutes of that TED Talk telling funny stuff.
I have an interest in education. Actually, what I find is everybody has an interest in education, don't you? I find this very interesting. If you're at a dinner party and you say you work in education, actually, you're not often at dinner parties, frankly, if you work in education, you're not asked, you know, and you're never asked back, curiously. That's a it strikes me. But if you are, and you say to somebody, they say, what do you do? And you say, you work in education, you can see the blood run from their face. They're like, oh my God, you know, why me? My one night out all week. But if you ask people about their education, they pin you to the wall. Because it's one of those things that goes deep with people. Am I right? Like religion and money and other things. So I have a big interest in education, and I think we all do. We have a huge vested interest in it, partly because it's education that's meant to take us into this future that we can't grasp. If you think of it, children starting school this year will be retiring in 2065. Nobody has a clue, despite all the expertise that's been on parade for the past 4 days, what the world will look like in 5 years' time. And yet we're meant to be educating them for it.
And then he does the Earl Nightingale technique where he slowly, methodically brings out the point that he's trying to make and makes it funny along the way. So he's using the Zig Ziglar, Earl Nightingale technique to add in that humor to make it more fun. So it's funny how in the last 50, 60 years, something like that, we've kind of come full circle. We went from the one-point talk to all the way through all kinds of iterations to where the motivational people of today, the folks that are doing the best presentations, especially on YouTube and TED Talks, that kind of thing, are basically doing a one-point talk with great content and great entertainment value. So if you want to motivate and inspire people, that's the technique that I would use. So what does this mean? So the takeaway from this is that you can learn something from every other speaker. I mean, we can always learn something. We never know it all. I've been speaking for 20 plus years now, and I'm still learning. And it's funny because I'll get new presenters that will come in and they'll say, I want to be as good as you. And I'll tell them, you're never going to be as good as me, ever. And it's always kind of discouraging to them until I explain why. You're never going to be as good as me because I started 25 years ago and I'm still learning. So I'm getting better every single day. So it's going to take you a while to catch up. However, if you want to be like me, or if you want to get better than me, you can actually do it a lot easier than what I did because you can use me as your example, just like I used some of these other speakers as my example. So we can always learn from other people. And that's one of the reasons why if you're struggling with presentations, or if you have something specific that is kind of outside of your normal type of presentation. So if you give presentations a lot, but you don't give motivational speeches and you need help with that, it's good to get a coach. Get somebody who's done that before because they can shorten your learning curve. They can shorten your learning cycle pretty significantly, pretty dramatically. So like, for instance, when people come through our Fearless Presentations classes, one of the neat things about that is that they are able to learn more in the 2-day Fearless Presentations class than what I could learn in the first 5 or 6 years that I was training, because there was no class like this back then. There was nobody that taught these simple things the way that we do it. But now that we do, we can shorten that process. And guess what? A year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, somebody else is going to come up with something even better, and that will be the next iteration. But until that time, we can shorten the time pretty significantly if you get a coaching and go through some training. So if you want to motivate and inspire people with your words, take a few of these tips from some of these motivational greats, and you can't help but being successful in your own right. Thanks a lot for being a part of the Fearless Presentations podcast. I look forward to having you come back every single week. Subscribe to the podcast because you'll get new content all the time. And we love doing this and we love that you're a part of it. Thanks a lot.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.